There's a number of guests with us now that weren't here this morning, so little introduction to the theme of this weekend's discussion. We are all the speakers and presenters are all addressing the same theme or topic, the role of prayer in awakening our relationship, our dormant, loving relationship with Krishna. This morning we had a general discussion about what prayer is, its role in different traditions, not unique to one tradition or another, that's universal as a way of connecting, linking with the Supreme, communicating with the Supreme, communing with the Supreme, having some direct interaction with the Supreme Personality of Godhead through prayer. And this evening, I'd like to speak specifically about the role of humility in both prayer and the practice of bhakti in general. Those of you that were with us this morning, you'll probably remember Jai Jagannath made reference to a section from Brihat Bhagavatamrita, where humility is spoken of in its relationship with attaining the goal of prema. So they have some newer people here, so I'm going to go a little bit slowly with terminology. Prema is a Sanskrit word that means the ripened fruit of love of God in its fully matured stage. In the beginning, the practices, they lead to the sprouting of the seed of love and the unfolding of that seed in the form of the metaphor is used, a little seedling that grows into a creeper, and as the creeper grows and grows and grows, it penetrates through the universe, beyond the coverings of the universe, into the spiritual sky, coming for a position of repose in the spiritual sky, in the spiritual planet of Krishna Loka, and it offers flowers, and finally fruit, ripened fruit, at the lotus feet of Krishna. And that ripened fruit has a name, Krishna Prema. So from the sadhana stage, or the beginning practicing stage, which we're in, through the growth of this creeper of devotion, through the spontaneous, ecstatic stage, bhava-bhakti, into the prema-bhakti stage, it's all just progressive stages, very predictably describable by a horticulturist, a bhakti horticulturist, someone that knows how the creeper of bhakti unfolds. And the section that Jai Jagannath was reading from, I'd like to read a little bit because it's right on topic of humility. The person who's speaking is Narada Muni. And Narada Muni is describing the maturing and the matured stage of love of God. Awakening of devotion, bhakti, by hearing and chanting, and the continuing hearing and chanting that serves like sprinkling of water to continue to grow the creeper. The water is the hearing and chanting activity, and the creeper grows and grows. Very naturally, it grows and grows and continues to grow up to the stage of prema. And an integral, inseparable from devotion to the Supreme is the role of humility. So here's what's described by Narada Muni. And the commentary is by Sanatana Goswami himself. one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. So we'll go to, this is chapter 5 of part 2, Brihad Bhagavatamrita, where Narada says, in the company of people whose only taste is for devotional service in pure love, that love appears of its own accord. Yet one must try hard to keep it concealed. Short statement. One of the best ways to cultivate the garden of bhakti is to associate with others who are carrying bhakti. And those that are very experienced and wise and sincere in that practice and cultivation of bhakti, by that association very quickly, the bhakti up to that stage of love quickly awakens in one's heart. And then the caution that Narada is giving is not so much will it grow, but keeping it internal, or not being an ostentatious personality, but keeping it internal. Then he describes the function of humility in developing the matured stage. That loving devotional service is far from the disciplines such as karma, jnana, and yoga. At every stage it is decorated by indifference to them, and its root is dainya, utter humility. So, a little Bhagavad Gita reference here. For those that are members of ISKCON or followers of Srila Prabhupada who have read his Bhagavad Gita, if asked the question, what's the most important, prominent essence verse of the whole Bhagavad Gita? 9 times out of 10, the devotees will give the same answer. 1866 Bhagavad Gita. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami ma suchaha. You know the verse? Could you say it? Sarva dharmam, let's say it together, just you and me. Sarva dharmam parityaja mamekam sharanam braja aham tvam sarva papebhyo moksha yishami ma suchaha. See, you do know. How old are you? 10. Yes? So, for those of you that are guests, here's a 10-year-old that knows this verse from Bhagavad Gita as the most prominent, the essence of the whole Bhagavad Gita. For those that are not familiar with Bhagavad Gita as it is and ISKCON and Prabhupada's teachings, if they're asked the same question, commonly, this is my experience, there's another answer. Karma nivadikaraste mapaleshu kadachana. So those of you that don't know Bhagavad Gita, here's what it means. It's the verse that says, detached, dutiful work. Karma, pala, tyag. Renouncing the fruits of work. So what the Sanskrit word is adhikar. Adhikar means, we discussed this somewhere along the line. Adhikar means, in Hindi, right. You have the privilege, you have the qualification. Like if you want to drive a car, you got to have a driver's license, you got to have a registration, you got to have insurance. Then you can drive a car. You don't have those things, pull over, buddy. Let me see your license and registration. Oh, you're under arrest. You don't have the right to drive a car. So we have a right, similarly, or the duty, the religious duty, we have the qualification because of our involvement with the modes of nature to do those things that are prescribed according to the modes of nature. That's our duty, to do what we must do according to the assigned teachings of the Vedas, theistic conduct according to the codes of the Vedas. We have a right to do that. But we don't have a right to the phala, the fruit. Phala means fruit. We're not entitled to the fruits. Ma paleshu kadachana. We're not entitled to the fruits of that prescribed duty. So we're dutiful, but not entitled to the fruits. And the further the verse says, never consider yourself to be the cause of the fruits, and never be attached to non-performance of activity. Always do your duty, never not do your duty, and don't be attached to the results. Don't consider yourself to be the cause of the results either. That's being carried out by material nature, prakriti. So there's a relationship between the soul and prakriti, material nature. In relation to material nature, we have a right to do our duties. We're not entitled to the fruits. So that's when one follows that teaching, that's karma yoga. Actually, it's in the Buddhi Yoga section of chapter 2, 247 Bhagavad Gita. And so if you're not attached to the results, but you're attached to the work, what is that? Do you know anybody that's attached to their work but not to the results of their work? It's very unusual. It's not at all common. It's hard to find such a person. You have to be attached to something, so be attached to the one who's the bestower of the fruits, the Supreme. And so the fruits belong to the Supreme. You offer the fruits to the Supreme. Karma Yoga. So those who are following the paths of karma, the verse is saying, Gyan, path of knowledge, cultivation of knowledge, path of practicing mystic yoga, the yoga system. Those are, as we were discussing this morning, external. Remember? External. So what's internal? Internal is what's the activity of the soul. So at every stage, the decoration, that's the language here, of indifference to being the enjoyer of the fruits of my work, or being the enjoyer of the fruits of cultivation of knowledge, or being enjoyer of the fruits of yoga practice, particularly the mystic perfections or siddhis that come from mystic yoga. Bhakti is characterized by detachment from those. I mean, for the edification of our experienced devotees, there's one guest with us that's quite new, and right away he's understood. You people speak about detachment a lot. Yes. But detachment from what and attachment to what? Because attachment is natural. At least the bhakti process is not to make things zero or void or shunya or nirvana. Our goal is attachment to the Supreme. And that's the attachment to the Supreme has, the verse is saying, has its root in humility. Well, that's what I want to discuss this evening. How is it that attachment to the Supreme has as its root humility? Well, what's the opposite of humility? Pride. And what is pride? Pride goes together with false ego. So false ego, it's I and mine. Aham in Sanskrit, the conception of self. So if I have, I'm spirit soul. That's the teaching of Bhagavad Gita. That's who I am. The spirit soul is covered by a body. Spirit, the body covering is given because I have desires, separate from my real self-interest, my real separate from the interest of the Supreme. I've got material desires, so I get a material body to help facilitate the fulfillment of those material desires. The teaching of Bhagavad Gita is, don't go there. Don't put your hand in the cookie jar. The fruits of what comes from this body belong to the Supreme, and offer them to the Supreme. Become attached to the Supreme. So attachment goes to the Supreme. And with attachment to the Supreme comes detachment from matter. Say it the other way. Detachment from matter is possible by attachment to the Supreme. So the goal is to become attached to the Supreme. How can I strive to become attached to the Supreme if I'm proud? So if I have a misconception of who I am, we'll go down that path for a moment. I'm this body. The conception of I am this body covers the conception of who I really am, and I take on a mistaken identity or a false identity or false ego. I am this body. Okay, so now I'm this body, and I'm doing things. And from this body comes work. And then there's fruits of the work, and what's mine is the fruits of my work. That's what this body does. So I'm a carpenter, and I take some hammers, and I take some nails, and take a saw, and take some wood, and make a chair. And it's mine. Why is it mine? Came from me, this body. Never mind where the wood came from, where the nails came from, the ability came from, the saw came from. The chair came from me, so it's mine. So I'm entitled to own it. And if I want, I can take it to the marketplace and sell it for some chapati flour and some vegetables and some milk and some other nice things. Or maybe I'll give a couple chairs to a dentist and he can fix my tooth or something, you know, but it's mine. It's bartering or, you know, money or something. But it's mine. I and mine. That's the material conception. Gita is teaching us we're not this body, we're spirit soul. Real simple. And then if I'm not this body but spirit soul, then what's there to be proud about? The real conception of humility is not low self-esteem, but real conception of humility is, I'm this little insignificant spark according to the teachings of the scripture, 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. That's how small the soul is. Keshagra-shatabhagasha, very tiny. Part of the Supreme, it's unlimited. Now that's humility, that's reality. Humility is reality, or reality is humility. It's humbling. And from that position of reality, I'm this tiny, fragmental spark of the Supreme. So what am I supposed to do once I know that? Serve the Supreme. What does the part do in relation to the whole? Serves the whole. What does the hand do in relation to the rest of the body? The hand goes on strike and says, forget the rest of the body. I'm tired of giving food to the stomach and the mouth. I'm just going to enjoy the food myself. It's self-defeating. The part is meant to serve the whole, not serve itself. So my real identity as spirit soul part of the Supreme is to serve the Supreme. That service to the Supreme has as its root dainya, or utter humility. So that's how it starts. Serving the Supreme starts with this reality check that says, according to the scripture, I'm spirit soul, part of the Supreme. I meant to serve the Supreme. In that consciousness, let me serve the Supreme. That's humility. And then humility grows and grows and grows. What these verses are describing is up to the stage of the mature fruit of that creeper of bhakti that produces fruits and flowers in the spiritual world that the lotus feet of Krishna offers them. It offers love. And humility is present in the beginning and at every step, in the mature stage, in the fully blown stage of humility and love of God. So I'm going to read, this is commentary written by Sanatan Goswami describing this state of humility. Bhakti Yoga, in all its phases of practice and achievement, in this life and the next, is always decorated with the ornament of indifference to material desires. Mahapaleshu kadachana. The fruits of the work, and attachment behind the attachment is the desire I want to enjoy. Indifference to material desire, instead transfer that desire to the spiritual side. This holds true whether bhakti is performed internally with the subtle body or externally with one's physical body and senses and the body's external possessions. So there's two parts. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, perform your prescribed duty, that's the external part, and the internal part, always think of me. So bhakti has both. You do your prescribed duty and the internal part. You think of Krishna. You do that prescribed duty in thought of making an offering unto Krishna. When one's secondary means and goals to become, when one allows secondary means and goals to become prominent, one deviates from bhakti. Whatever that might be, something secondary, like, I want an iPad, or I want some recognition, or I want to become a good soccer player, or whatever it is, you know, a secondary desire. If that secondary desire takes the primary position, one deviates from bhakti. One can be a soccer player, one can, you know, have an iPad, and you can do things that are on this physical plane, provided the purpose behind them is somehow to serve and glorify Krishna. I don't know exactly how you offer a soccer to Krishna, but I know how you can use an iPad for a service to Krishna and do other things for Krishna. The most essential support and a candidate for pure bhakti must always take help from humility. So at the beginning, at the middle, and in the mature stage of love. An intelligent person. That's all of you, right? Everyone's paying attention now because it's speaking about you. Oops. Wise men define dānya, that's humility, as the state in which one always thinks oneself exceptionally incapable and low, even when endowed with all excellences. That's not low self-esteem. It's a mood. It's a feeling. It's a spiritual recognition of, although the endowments of this excellence, that excellence, the other excellence, my position is this little tiny spiritual speck. And Krishna is very kind. Krishna may have given this or that or the other ability. Someone can sing. Someone can dance. Someone can do this. Someone can do that. Krishna is very kind. He's given this vibhuti, this some ability, some opulence. But what's my position? My position is this little tiny fragmental spark of Krishna. That's my position. And I always think of myself in that way. Krishna can take those excellences away. Krishna can give those excellences and give more. Whatever Krishna wants to do, what's my position is, this little tiny speck. That's who I am. And from that position, my strong desire is to try to serve Krishna with whatever it is that Krishna endows me with. Therefore, this is the purport. Narada specifies that one who actually has humility or dainya is endowed with all good qualities. For instance, such a person observes positive and negative regulations. That's an opulence. So besides, you know, I may be able to sing nicely, dance nicely, not because I can do that, I don't need to follow regulations anymore, because I arrived. I'm there. But because of feeling meek and humble, I must very carefully follow the regulations. A nice example himself is Sanatan Goswami, who's writing this commentary. He's speaking the principle, but he taught the principle by example. It is said that the vows of Sanatan Goswami were like lines in stone. For example, he lived to be quite old, and he had this practice, even he was very old, that every day he would do Govardhan Parikrama. Govardhan Parikrama is how many kilometers? 26 kilometers? That's a long walk for an old person. Every day. And he was so old, it was very difficult. But he maintained his vow. So one day Krishna appeared before him and said, "You don't have to do this anymore. You're on the perfected platform. You're at the stage of prema. You don't need to do something to attain prema. You're too old. Your body is infirm. Please don't continue this." And Sanatan said, "Lines in the stone. I must. I've taken a vow. I must." So Krishna very kindly placed his foot on one slab or stone, a shila of Govardhan, and put his cane and made an imprint in the shila, about that big, flat. Said, "You, sir, can ambulate this some number of times, 6-7 times, and that's as good as going around the whole Govardhan Hill. Just do that." So Sanatan Goswami did that. Because I must keep my vow. Even in the stage of perfection, feeling himself very humble. Free from false ego, and has a healthy fear of material life. One of the things that Prabhupada said on a number of occasions, I directly heard him say, one of the principal duties of a spiritual master is to thoroughly train the disciple in the abject futility of finding happiness in fruitive activities. I'll say it again. It's nice. One of the primary duties and responsibilities of a spiritual master is to thoroughly train the disciple in the abject futility of seeking happiness in fruitive activity. So a qualified bhakta has a healthy, wants to distance material life from them. It's not happiness. It looks like sukha, but it's dukkha. Looks like happiness, but it's the dukkha yonaya evate. It's the place of a birth of distress. Let me stay away. Furthermore, though Narada doesn't say so, transcendental dainya or humility is a state of extreme agitation that can lead to tears and other ecstatic outbursts. Feelings of humility become so intense that love, bhava, ecstasy can awaken, because it's not just feeling low, it's a hankering of the soul to be with the Supreme, in connection with the Supreme. An ecstatic emotion awakens. And the last section I'm going to read, just when humility or dānya fully matures, prema, the ripened fruit of the creeper of bhakti, unfolds without limit. And so we see dānya, humility, and prema, transcendental love, acting in relationship in which each is both cause and effect. What does that mean? One is the effect of the other. This is the cause of that effect. This is the cause of that effect. They grow parallel or simultaneously. One nurtures the other. Here's Sanatana Goswami's commentary. If prema, the mature fruit of the creeper of bhakti, is supposed to be the final result of all devotional endeavors, how can humility be a consequence, an effect of prema? Answer, yes. Prema is the final goal. But dānya, humility, is not altogether different from prema. Dānya is an integral component of prema, and both foster one another. So that's the mature stage, and back to where we are, the practicing stage, where cultivating, trying to cultivate spiritual consciousness, God consciousness, awaken our dormant God consciousness. And with that quality of humility comes some, naturally, some submission. That word submission is found in Bhagavad Gita 4:34. Do you know that verse, 4:34? Tadvidhi pranipatena. You know the verse? Can you say the verse? It's a, yes, I'll say it a little louder in the microphone. Thank you. She got it right though. Tadvidhi pranipatena. Pranipat means submission. Pariprashnena. Prashna. Asking questions. Inquisitiveness. Sevaya. Service. Tadvidhi pranipatena pariprashnena sevaya upadikshanti te jnanam jnaninas tattva darshanaha. Krishna says to Arjuna, that person who wishes to know tadvidhi, the absolute truth, knows God, must find a tattvadarshi. And when you find such a tattvadarshi, a seer of the truth, then three things, pranipat, submission unto that person, prashna, you ask questions of that person, and seva, you render service according to the instructions received from that person. And you serve that person by following the instructions from that person. And such a tattvadarshi, a seer of the truth, he can impart knowledge just by that simple method. Very nice verse. So I want to read something from Nectar of Devotion. This is a writing of Rupa Goswami that's teaching a summary of how to perform devotional service. And he speaks about prayer, which is our topic, and he speaks about humility, which is our topic for this evening. This is found in chapter 9, under the section called Submission, Pranipat. He writes, in the Skanda Purana, there is a statement about submission unto the lotus feet of the Lord. It is said there that those who are sober, dhira, not the other kind, not like they didn't pass, they passed the intoxication test. Not that kind. Dhira means their mind is not disturbed by material things. Any variety of material things. Their mind remains undisturbed. It said that those who are sober devotees offer their submission to Krishna in the following three ways. So our topic is submission, and there are three ways. It gives the Sanskrit. Samprartanatmika, very feelingly offering prayers to Dainya, Bodhika, or humbly submitting oneself. Submitting prayers, submitting oneself in humility, and lalasa mayi, desiring some perfectional stage. And he describes lalasa mayi, hankering for Krishna, and a particular expression of devotion unto Krishna. And he says that's not material. There's material hankering, and then there's spiritual hankering. Hankering to serve Krishna in a way that it's so pleasing to Krishna. Not for my experience, for his happiness. That's a spiritual hankering, and for that requires submission. It's a type of submission. So, prayer and humility. It's one thing to recite standard prayers and to do that in a dutiful way, or even, frankly, a mechanical way. That's something. But to feelingly open your heart and feelingly offer prayers, that springs from humility, a spiritual conception, an internal, besides what the mouth and the tongue and the mouth cavity and the air and the vocal cords, and some sound comes out and you may offer a prayer. But the consciousness inside, that bhakti springs from humility. And when that humility becomes awakened, natural prayer will follow. Because you're looking to someone who is your shelter, your support, your strength. And in the case of God, the source of everything, everything. The source of everything. So, I wish to serve him. I wish to become pure. Whatever that request is, or glorification, you are supreme. You're the source of everything. You're the cause of all causes. And as Dravida Prabhu was describing earlier today, I offer my obeisances, namaha, different types of prayer and different moods of prayer. But they come from humility. The point is that humility is operative. It's an essential element for prayer. So praying helps one become humble, and being humble naturally flows from that as prayer. And if you're not humble, then cultivate humility. Sometimes that question is asked. How do I, if humble, humility is so important, how do I cultivate it? And one answer is, you practice it. Even in the beginning stage, it may not be, maybe a little clumsy, like trying to be humble when I'm not humble. But you cultivate it. Once Prabhupada was asked, how do I become sincere? And his answer was, by being sincere. Practice being sincere. Everyone knows what sincere means. We also know what duplicity means. So don't be duplicitous, be sincere. And cultivate, practice being sincere. Or another very nice example, one devotee in New York was asking Prabhupada, I've got all this service to do and people are honoring me because of all the things that I do, and I do it so well and I'm getting all this praise, and how do I stay humble? And they were standing on Mott Street in New York City, and Prabhupada put his cane down on the sidewalk, and he said, In the vastness of the spiritual sky, there is one largest of all the Vaikuntha planets called Krishna Loka. And on Krishna Loka, the presiding personality is the Supreme Personality, Lord Krishna. And there are various expansions of Krishna in the Vaikuntha planets, known as forms of Narayana. And those forms of Narayana, they expand as the Vishnu Tattva forms, one of them being Mahavishnu. And Mahavishnu lies down in one corner of the vastness of the unlimited spiritual sky. And from the body of Mahavishnu come unlimited numbers of universes streaming from the pores of his body as he exhales. And in one of those universes, unlimited numbers of universes, there's this planet Earth. And on this vast planet Earth, there are seven continents, one of them being the United States of America, North America. When with that North America, there's one country, United States. And within the United States, there's one state, New York State. Within that one state, there's one city called New York City. Within that city of New York, there's millions of people that live. And there's so many streets, and there's one street called Mott Street. And you're now asking me, how do I become humble? Think of yourself in the context of the Supreme Great, and it's very easy to be humble. You forget the Supreme Great, and it's very easy to be proud. And I thought I would end by just describing how much Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita in the 12th chapter, how much he appreciates those who are genuinely humble. Or in the case of Lord Chaitanya, in his associates, those who are genuinely humble. The associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were so very, very humble. Directly, it's described that Murari Gupta, some of you are familiar with Murari Gupta, maybe some of you are not. His residence, the home of Murari Gupta, was very near the home of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And in years, he was elder to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But his mood was like that of Hanuman unto Ram. And Hanuman's mood is also very humble. But what does Hanuman like to do besides be humble? He likes to do service. So Murari Gupta was in that mood. And he always wanted to serve Lord Chaitanya. So Lord Chaitanya, when he would have ecstatic moods, he would sometimes go quickly to the house of Murari Gupta and exhibit some ecstatic mood. And because of his intimate love for Lord Chaitanya, he would know exactly what to do. One time, Lord Chaitanya was in the mood of Mahavishnu. And he called out, "I am Mahavishnu!" And Murari Gupta knew exactly what to do. He had Lord Chaitanya get on his back and said, "I am Garuda." And he went around the courtyard carrying Lord Chaitanya on his shoulders. Another time Lord Chaitanya showed his form of Varaha. And he was calling loudly, "Shukra, Shukra!" So Murari Gupta, being so intimately connected with Lord Chaitanya, he knew exactly what to do. He went to the altar and he took an iron pot and placed the iron pot on his head, on his tusks. And so he was carrying the earth. It was a clay pot, carrying the earth. And he was moving around the courtyard in an ecstatic mood of Varaha, rescuing the earth. And in his exchanges with Lord Chaitanya, he was always very, very humble. There's one time when he went to see Lord Chaitanya, and he was seated with Lord Nityananda. This is especially for our devotees who will appreciate this. He paid his respects to Lord Chaitanya. And then after paying his respects to Lord Chaitanya, he paid his respects to Lord Nityananda. And Lord Chaitanya said, Murari, what's wrong with you? Don't you have any etiquette? He said, no, I'm just paying my respects to you and then to Lord Nityananda. He said, I will teach you. This is not proper etiquette. And Murari was confused. He didn't know what he had done wrong. So that night, he had a dream. And in his dream, Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda appeared in his dream, and Lord Chaitanya changed or transformed his form into Krishna. And Lord Nityananda transformed his form into Balaram. And Krishna said, he is my elder brother. He should be respected first because he's my elder brother. And his dream broke. So the next morning, Murari Gupta went to see Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, and he paid his respects to Lord Nityananda and then to Lord Chaitanya. And Lord Chaitanya said, Murari, what are you doing? What's wrong with you? Don't you know etiquette? And he said, you're my Lord. I'm just doing what you're telling me to do. So humble, so intimate in his relationship with Lord Chaitanya. And Haridas Thakur and Kolavachar Sridhar and all the associates, Rupa Goswami, all of the associates of Lord Chaitanya. One very nice description of Rupa Goswami was his picture is on the altar. As you look at the altar, on the right hand side is Jagannath, Baladev and Subhadra. And below is a photo or a painting of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. They're the intimate associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, following him in his disciplic line. So of the six of the Goswamis of Vrindavan, most exalted was Rupa Goswami. And Lord Chaitanya confirmed on two occasions that he gave the fullness of his mercy, invested it within Rupa Goswami so that Rupa Goswami could write transcendental literatures according to Lord Chaitanya's teachings. So one time in Rupa Goswami was in Vrindavan and he wanted to visit Lord Chaitanya in Puri. So he was developing this desire. So he made a plan to visit Lord Chaitanya, and in the course of his travel, he was in his mind, because he didn't have a iPad, didn't have a, you know, computer. He just in his mind he was composing a drama, and it was the drama was the pastimes of Krishna. And when he got almost to Puri, just outside Puri, there's a road that goes along the northern-southern road that was there 500 years ago during this time. It passes near Bhubaneswar and just continues south at some distance as Puri. So he was passing through there, and he spent the night at a town called Satyabhamapur, named after Satyabhama, one of the queens of Krishna. And in his dream at night, Satyabhama appeared and told him, you're compiling a drama, make it two dramas. One drama of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and the other Krishna's pastimes in Dwarka. So when he woke, he understood, Satyabhama has given me some nice instruction. So in his mind, he was just then dividing the verses that would go over here and the ones that would go over there. And finally he reached Puri. Sometime later, without having said this to anybody, Lord Chaitanya said, I understand you're composing a drama. It should be in two parts. Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan and out of Vrindavan. He hadn't said anything, but he understood. Lord Chaitanya is omniscient. He knew. And so he then continued. Then he started, when he reached Puri, he started writing the drama, the two dramas. And the devotees very much appreciated the qualities of Rupa Goswami. And when they heard that he was composing a drama, they wanted to hear it. They wanted him to speak it, and they wanted to examine the qualities of the drama. So Lord Chaitanya visited him and said, I'm going to bring my associates here tomorrow. You'll be prepared to recite, have the text ready. So when they came the next day, Lord Chaitanya's associates, Rupa Goswami was seated off at a distance. And Lord Chaitanya said, come here, come sit with us and you can recite the drama. He didn't come. He didn't say no, but he didn't come because in his heart, although he was the recipient of the fullness of Lord Chaitanya's mercy, he was considering himself not qualified to sit with all these exalted persons. This is a very nice example of what Brihat Bhagavatamrita says. When men, wise men, excuse me, define humility, dānya, as the state in which one always thinks oneself exceptionally incapable and low, even when endowed with all excellences. So this was Rupa Goswami's position. And the prayers that Rupa Goswami offers to Krishna and about Krishna in his two dramas, they're just so exquisite. They're so beautiful. He offers one prayer to the holy name that when the devotees heard the prayer of Rupa Goswami glorifying the holy name, they were stunned. They said, we've heard many glorifications of the holy name, but nothing like this. The verse goes something like this. And then I'll end, along with the conch. Who knows how much nectar there is, in the two syllables, Krishna. When vibrating the sound Krishna, I wish I had thousands of tongues, and while Krishna is dancing on my tongue, and when the sound vibration enters my ear, I wish I had millions of ears to hear that sweet sound of Krishna. And when the sound enters into the chamber of one's heart, it makes the mind still and inert and all the senses stunned, just receiving the sound of the ecstatic holy name of Krishna. So, poetic is another quality along with this quality of humility, a natural quality of a devotee. And when there's humility, there's submission unto Krishna. And when there's submission unto Krishna, Krishna receives one's submission and he imparts knowledge. And when Krishna imparts knowledge, the words that one speaks, like Rupa Goswami's words, become so beautiful. It's just elegant and eloquent glorifications of Krishna in prayers offered to Krishna. So humility is an integral part of prayer and an integral part of bhakti. So, and there, see if there's any questions or comments from anyone. Yes?
Thank you, Maharaj. I had a question in regards to the soul being 1/10,000 size, the tip of a hair. We can see how a humble conception should arise. In the spiritual world, how does that relate? Because the devotees there will have a spiritual form. They may interact with Krishna in seemingly similar size, at least in the intimacy of their...
The impetus for humility in the spiritual world is different. There, in the Vaikuntha realm, it's awe and reverence. The opulences of Vaikuntha are splendorous beyond imagination, and feeling very humble in that atmosphere is very easy, very natural. And in the Goloka realm, the sweetness and all attractiveness of Krishna is so overwhelming that there's no room for anything. The condition of purity is so intact and so installed or present, manifest, that there's no pride. There's no need to check pride, that thinking of oneself, how small I am compared to Krishna. It's purity instead of, it's a spiritual dimension of dānya or humility in a most exalted way. Here's what is said. There's a specific description of those who are in this. Here we go. Dānya, or humility, at its most exalted form, comes forth when prema, pure love of God, reaches full maturity, as it did in the women of Gokula when they were separated from Krishna. When meeting with Krishna, their attachment for Krishna was so pure and so intense that their feeling was, even when with Krishna, that after some time Krishna is going to leave. So their love was intensified by anticipation of separation. And when there was separation, it exploded in intensity. So that attachment for Krishna was their humility. Or their humility was their attachment for Krishna. What is my significance? Krishna is significant. That I'm being given some opportunity to somehow serve him, that's great fortune. That's how the residents of the spiritual world can maintain their humility. Something else? Yes.
Thank you, Maharaj. Is humility something that we learn or is inherent
both
to the human condition?
It's something that we reawaken and we can practice it, in that sense learn it. But it's inherent, so in that sense it's not something outside of us we have to bring inside. But we certainly can and should cultivate it. And as it becomes natural, because it's the inside, it comes outside, then it's spontaneous and it intensifies and it grows. So at the beginning we practice humility. In part we practice humility by our offering of obeisances. Namaha. You heard Dravida's class on Namaha, right? So I belong to you. This body belongs to you and I belong to you. Namaha. We practice that. And then it becomes, that's reality. Not an artificial practice, it's a reality practice. And it comes out in a mature stage, very naturally. Here's the microphone. You just shut it off.
I want to confirm something I heard. Instead of mechanically saying a prayer, even the standard prayers, the best way to enter into the meaning of the prayer with an open heart and enter into the mood of prayer,
yeah, sure,
is through developing humility. That is the key to do that.
Do you want to know which comes first, the chicken or the egg? Is that the question? Which is the cause and which is the effect? That your question?
No. What is the right way to get into the mood of a prayer or pray with feelings? Is it through humility, cultivating humility, or something else?
I don't understand your question.
What is the right way to cultivate?
What is the right way to cultivate? Humility?
Cultivate the mood of prayer? Like, how can we feelingly pray?
I think I answered that. You practice it. How do you be sincere? By being sincere. You cultivate it. You recognize you're on the spiritual conception. I'm very tiny in relation to the position of Krishna. That other example, you know, Prabhupada gave to Brahmananda of, we're very tiny in the totality of existence. We're literally insignificant. Wondering how do we cultivate humility? We're literally insignificant. And if some opportunity to serve the unlimited comes to us, what great fortune that we cultivate that way. Reality. Just, you know, hit the pause button, do a little reality check on who we are, what's going on. We cultivate it. And then there's, that's reality, and then there's a mood. The mood is, from that position, I try to serve. I'll give you another answer. Go on book distribution. He liked book distribution. And in book distribution, you learned humility. Yes? Yes. And how does it happen? You just go on book distribution, you learn humility. Because our tendency is to be attached to the fruits of our work, and we want everyone to say yes, and that's not what happens. And they say other things besides yes. And we learn humility. So why do we keep doing when people are being rude and crass and harsh and, you know, sometimes say yes? Why do we keep doing it? Because it's for the pleasure of a superior, for our founder Acharya and our just predecessor Acharyas. That's the position of humility. It's nice. It's nice. The other is not nice. So we continue, we cultivate it. Try controlling your mind when chanting japa. That's a good way to practice humility. Mind wants to go. You want to say, stay with Krishna. And you're tiny. So then you call out to Krishna, help. Humility. Cultivate it. Enter into that spirit, into that mood. Go, Kula Chandran, that's it. Go all the way in the back. Go, Kula Nanda.
Thank you, Maharaj, for the class. I want to know if you can explain the different expression of humility in devotees. Very advanced devotees, that they may express their humility in a way that ordinary man won't understand. For example, Srila Prabhupada sometimes call him Sangwal Rascal, like that. Because we have a conception of humility that a person should be, especially a saintly person, should be always very, like,
okay,
expressing his humbleness in being so nice, personality like that, but never expressing anger like that. So.
Okay, thank you for that question. When Arjuna was engaged in the Kurukshetra battle, after the Bhagavad Gita was spoken, Krishye Vachanam Tava, whatever it is that you have said, I accept. And he engages in battle. So when Arjuna was engaged in battle, did he set aside humility and take up something else besides humility? His humility was in relation to Krishna. That's humility. And if you're a Kshatriya, if you're Arjuna, and your duty to Krishna is to give protection, then you give protection. The position in relation to Krishna is humility. To carry out the duty, strong effort may be required in the case of a Kshatriya from the position of humility in service to Krishna. He didn't lose his humility. He was, in relation to Krishna, fully submissive, fully humble, carrying out Krishna's will. The service required a particular behavior and conduct and mood to be victorious. So he did that. Krishna incited him to anger, to fight against the nasty Duryodhana and company. Despite his softness, wishing to be non-violent, and not cause any disruption. And similarly, Prabhupada's example, he was speaking as he spoke in certain occasions to help wake us up. And yes, we didn't expect, or someone may not expect that from a sadhu to speak, but Krishna speaks, and people are being misled. When you see blind persons being led into a ditch, you say something. Stop it! Stop taking the blind men, leading them into the ditch and throwing them in the ditch. Stop it! So, if the same thing could be said mildly and it would be heeded, fine. And if not, then strongly. In humility, to submission to Krishna. So as the situation requires, in service to Krishna. We can't imitate, or were we to imitate, we'd be in Maya. We don't have that adhikar, we don't have that right, or that qualification. One who has can speak that way, and Prabhupada did speak that way. A sadhu can also cut. Chindanti kovidas tasya koyat karma. One can cut the knot of material affinity in an appropriate way. A sadhu knows when to do that. Soft as a rose and hard as a thunderbolt, according to the circumstance. That's a sadhu. That's a Vaishnav sadhu. Okay, I'll end there. Thank you very much. Prabhupada ki jai.